to Cascadia Public Radio.
It is June 18th, 2009. I'm your host, Alex Hanser, reporting live from Portland, Oregon. Joe Skosin is our guest this evening, and we're going to be talking with him about a number of things. We've been talking about military technology being given to the Chinese, also being shared with the Russians and other rogue states. It's a very interesting evening that we have for you. A lot of important information that you're going to want to check out for yourself, because this is one of the best nights to have our guests with us. So thanks, Joel, for coming on.
Pleasure to meet you.
Now, we're going to cover some news, and feel free to chime in on some of this stuff, some updates. Then we'll get into the big picture, what's really going on here. And for those of you that haven't been under a rock, that don't have your hands over your ears, you may have heard about North Korea in the news this week. And this is actually where we are going to begin our journey this evening. We talked about this last week, and now we see where this is moving. DPRK threatens to launch preemptive strike against the United States. The Democratic People's Republic of Korea has warned it would launch a preemptive attack against the United States. And they're talking about West Coast cities. Alaska, California. We've heard Seattle mentioned last week when there was a member of Congress saying, hey, with the cutbacks to missile defense, Seattle could get nuked. The question is, how far out is Portland from the ocean? And the answer is 60 miles. So Portland in and of itself is not an island, although it has not been mentioned yet as a target. We'll get Joel's take on the Pacific Northwest. So this is what we're seeing right now in Korea. You can see the pictures up on the screen. They mobilized in North Korea to protest the sanctions. But this is going to affect Korea in many great ways. Some of their food sources are going to be cut off, so it's going to make the people even angrier. They're being groomed, this population, mark my words, to be the enemies of us in the future. And so this is what is taking place right now. North Korea empties foreign accounts. This is in the news. Big move. Big moves are taking place. North Korea is rushing to withdraw money from its overseas bank accounts after the United Nations imposed financial and other sanctions for its nuclear test. In the next report, and we're moving very quickly because the bigger picture is what's most important. But we need to keep you updated. U.S. military tracking Korean ship suspected of proliferating missiles and nukes. I urge that you go to websites like blacklistennews.com. It's my friend's website. We have a lot of these articles posted there. Going into the tensions between NATO and Russia, NATO targeting Russia in Baltic war game. This is one other headline that's in the news. This is from Wired magazine. Now, briefly, there's some major shifts taking place in the economy. We'll talk about that tonight as well. Fed buying treasuries, China selling treasuries. Now, in Reuters, we can see that the Federal Reserve is buying treasuries maturing May 2016 through May 2019. That's the headline there. What are they buying them with? I don't get it.
That's a procedure for creating money.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, it's called monetizing a debt. When they buy their own bonds, they actually create the money out of nothing. So this is inflationary.
And now we see China saying they're selling bonds. So first they were buying bonds and they stopped. We saw that a couple weeks ago. Now they're selling them. It's going to trigger some other things. Governor seeks more banking powers. Bank of England. And again, we're just going headline by headline, guys, straight down the line tonight. We've got that article there. Bank of England is calling for greater powers to allow it to fulfill its new role of promoting financial stability. So its whole package is a good thing. And we're seeing the exact same thing with the dollar. Dollar drops on reserve, currency doubts. And so the solution is, of course, to give the Federal Reserve more power under the guise of fixing what went wrong. It's really bizarre, but they really want us to believe it. But how are they going to fix the problems of California? White House says no to California budget help. That's the next headline. So it's only a matter of time, in my opinion, as I've been saying for a couple of years now, before something happens, a crisis in California, that triggers a mass exodus from Los Angeles, from some of the major cities, to places like Portland, Oregon. And they're reading down here about how, down there, about how Portland's one of the most livable cities. And so it's, what do you think about that, Jill? Because it's attracting a lot of people.
Well, it's true. California has always looked to Oregon as one of the primary destinations, especially Northern Californians, because the climate isn't very much different from Northern California. But it's important to remember that California is a very wealthy state. There's no excuse for it to be bankrupt except it's overspending. And that's why they're playing the typical tactic of shutting down essential services to cause the people to agree to greater tax increases or other things, mm-hmm. but in effect they need to cut back on the welfare state in California, of which the illegal alien population is a major component.
Time for a new world order. That's according to the Brazilian president. This is what is also being said in the news, and we see Ahmadinejad saying the exact same thing. So Bill, let's show both of those reports in brief, just so people can see that this is really, really actually happening. Time for New World Order. Brazilian president, the global financial crisis has reduced the differences between nations and created the opportunity to form a new world order. So that is according to the Brazilian president. And we see Ahmadinejad stressing the need for a new world order as well.
And I might interject here that their version of New World Order is different than the Anglo-American establishment, or the U.S.-British New World Order. These are competing groups trying to control the New World Order in their own paradigm. Brazil, India, China, and Russia, or the BRIC group, just met in Russia, and they're essentially trying to control the output of the New World Order. But when they say New World Order, they're not talking about the same New World Order that Americans and British talk about.
I'm actually going to cover the rest of the news later. We're 7 minutes into the program, and again, I'm glad to have you here because I heard your show on your guest appearance on Coast to Coast, May 12, 2009. If you type his name into the internet, you'll find that particular interview. And you were talking. That's why you're here tonight. And that's what really is important to discuss and share with other people watching tonight. This idea that you were talking about how things are not as they seem with this whole threat of World War III and whatnot in terms of the lack of awareness and education on the part of the American people about what our government has done in the past with given certain technologies, certain bioweapons, chemical weapons to other countries, China, Russia. And so if there's a war coming, sir, and they're talking about it right now with North Korea, it seems logical we would want to find out where they got the weapons. So where would you like to start tonight in this analysis of what's really going on?
Well, let me start, Alex, with kind of a going back in time to let your audience know what has been the general way in which our foreign policy has operated since the turn of the 20th century. In other words, those that we call people related to an ideology of creating a world government or a new world order have used communism and crisis creation to break down the existing order, to create crises in order to have an excuse to come in and present an alternative which the public would not normally accept. But under a crisis, they will. I mean, we see this every day with the bailout. People are accepting unconstitutional powers given to the Federal Reserve, and they don't even question it because, you know, the economy is supposedly going to collapse if we don't bail out the big banks. The same thing happened with 9/11. They were able to justify many things that would never have been acceptable to the American people. And through the war on terror, you know, we've lost habeas corpus. We've lost, we've got indefinite detention, all of these things. We've got unlimited surveillance of American people. All of this has come about because of crisis creation. created by the very people who are still in power and attempting to say that they have the right to create a solution, but those solutions will not lead to a true solution. Now, going back historically, one of the things that caught my interest when I was a college, when I was even in high school here in Oregon, was, and I had a lot of professors from Reed College who were on the left, and they were, you know, very friendly towards...
Oh, you're a Reedy?
They were very friendly, of course, towards, you know, the far left and even communism. And, in fact, there were many aspects of our own government in the beginnings of the 20th century where we actually assisted. A lot of people don't realize that it was Wall Street people that kept Lenin in his apartment in Europe, waiting to take power into Russia. Through Frederick Engels, they kept Marx going to feed the, you know, the ideological mill. At the World War One was the first major turning point. Every major world war has been caused by reasons other than what is given in the history books. I mean, the assassination of the Archduke Ferdinand was, of course, the trigger. But who created that scenario, and who was the one who gave the drumbeat to go to war just based upon the assassination? All that was planned in advance. And the purpose, from the globalist point of view, of starting World War One was to make the first initial step through war to cause such a horrendous, you know, catastrophe of human life and loss of human life, they would get the American and European people to sign on to a world committee of governments of people to, and that was the League of Nations. Now, the League of Nations failed because of proper isolationist tendencies within the United States. They failed to go along with Wilson, who was controlled every president of the United States in the 20th century on, is that a handler. Colonel Edwin Mandel House was his handler. He was a real globalist. And Wilson was a very manipulated person. At the end of his life, he said, you know, I fear that this government is run by people far behind the scenes that have more power than I had ever realized. And he was sorry for the role that he had played in being manipulated. But they didn't get what they wanted in World War One. They didn't get the League of Nations. And what they did in the Treaty of Versailles is ensure that we'd have a Second World War by creating tremendous reparations against Germany that they could not pay without debasing their currency. In fact, we even had Wall Street people go over to Germany and teach them how to debase their currency as their way to pay off this debt.
The war was engineered for some people to make some money.
Not just to make money. We have to remember that from those that are against the New World Order from the standpoint of the left, everything is blamed on the evils of capitalism, because the left generally distrusts capitalism. But capitalism isn't the target. It's what we call crony capitalism or mercantilism, whereas capitalists of a higher order with a lot of money get into bed with government and use the power of government to secure their position against competition in the free market. That's not truly capitalism. That's crony capitalism, which is different. But they set the stage and created World War II by, first of all, financing Hitler. They financed the publication of his book. They set the stage by debasing the currency in order to, in Germany, create the conditions of despair that would allow both socialism under the National Socialist Party of Nazis and the communists to rise. And it was the juxtaposition, the contest of wills between these two socialist groups that Nazism was able to declare martial law and tyrannical powers because of what? The threat of communism. In other words, they always need a threat to justify tyrannical powers, and that's what Hitler did.
Interesting thing about that, you have the Reichstag fire,
for example. Agent provocateur. Turned out to be, they said he was a communist, but he was hired by the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
Blamed it on the communists. Now, that wasn't to say that the communists were saints. They weren't at all. They would have done the same thing that Hitler done had they been in power.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But the real purpose of World War II was to provoke Hitler and to provide the arms, and most of the arms of Krupp Industries were financed by Wall Street. But it's interesting that Hitler, even though he was a dupe of many influences, had to be induced to attack England. A lot of people think that the bombing of London was something that happened because of Hitler himself, and it isn't true. He refused to bomb London, And it was Churchill himself that devised a plan with the other allies that said, now we're going to have to provoke Germany, and that's why they firebombed the Ruhr industry cities in Germany, killing a lot of civilians. It was only after that that Hitler authorized bombing London, because he viewed England as a potential ally in creating this great empire that he had visions of. A lot of people don't understand that in history. It was the United States and Britain that together decided to firebomb German cities. Totally unnecessary. They could have won the war without targeting civilian areas. In fact, there are pilots after the war that said, you know, we knew where the civilian areas were, that it was all, it still had lights on, and the industrial areas were all blacked out, and said, and when we got orders to dump our incendiary bombs, why did they load incendiary bombs? To create a firestorm. And he said, when we got our orders, we knew they were going down on civilians, and we protested, but we were told to continue. So you see, there's two sides to these things. There is provocation. Of course, you must know, of course, about the six-point plan of Roosevelt to induce Japan to attack us. He actually went out of his way to cut off oil and to exacerbate the problems of Japan economically so that it would attack us. Not only did they know about the attack, they provoked the attack.
I've heard something about the code breakers were removed from their job, the ones that were looking for...
And the radar was shut down so that it could not see. All kinds of things happened to make it appear as if this were an accident, but it was not. This is detailed in Robert Stinnett's book, Day of Deceit on Pearl Harbor. Very, very carefully detailed. But what happened after the war was even more telling. We have George Marshall undercutting Chiang Kai-shek and pulling out military power so that Mao Zedong could come to power. The communists never would have come to power in China had it not been for the globalists. The Roosevelt administration was full of a lot of communists, including Alger Hiss, who was fingered by Whitaker Chamber, who was also a communist and said he was a member. But the establishment somehow always defended to the very death Alger Hiss. It is my opinion that Alger Hiss, in fact, was a globalist, that he went in, joined the Communist Party to help facilitate, because he was very high in the Roosevelt, to facilitate the other communists coming in to that. And we know that during the Roosevelt administration, Harry Dexter White and other communists, including Alger Hiss, helped facilitate much of the theft of critical technology materials that went to Russia in World War II. In Major Jordan's diary, he was the major in charge of the Lend-Lease base in Montana, the air base. He stopped the Russians from loading onto their airplane a lot of sealed cases that were diplomatic, sealed with diplomatic immunity. And they were acting very suspicious. He stopped, he opened the boxes, you know, which he wasn't supposed to, but he did anyway on a hunch, and he found they were full of the plans for the nuclear bombs. And he immediately confiscated the material. He called the White House for further instructions, and he was told, you are to close those boxes back up, give them to the Russians. He says, but they contain nuclear plans. And he says, we don't care whether, you know, you are to give them to the Russians and not tell anyone about this. He later found out that they were also shipping the first nuclear material, enriched uranium, to Russia to facilitate their exploding first bomb. So you see, here we have a future enemy that the U.S., in the name of Lend-Lease, is in fact giving our top-notch technology to. Mm-hmm. Same thing happened in Cuba. We undercut Batista militarily. The CIA, through Black Ops, got arms to Castro. We brought Castro to power. We had Herbert Matthews of the New York Times lauding Castro as a reformer. We had the second floor of the State Department full of a lot of leftists. But, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, the government was full of communists, and that's why this happened. But it isn't true, because when Earl Smith, the ambassador to Cuba, came raging back to the United States and complained to Eisenhower, who appointed him, about all of these leftists undercutting Batista and helping Castro, He said, well, go to the State Department and talk to him. And he found out that the higher-ups, who were not communists, were defending and would not remove any of these communists. In my opinion, this is evidence that we have higher-level globalists facilitating communists. And what for what purpose? Because the globalists don't want to get caught themselves undermining governments. So what they use, they facilitate communist revolutions. We didn't lose Vietnam, except purposely. You know, we gave it away at the table. We'd actually caused them to come back capitulating at the Paris peace talks because of the bombing in North Vietnam. And then Kissinger simply gave it away to them. We lost Laos and Cambodia by forcing the pro-Western government into a coalition government with the communists. And you know what that leads to. We lost Iran. We lost, almost every country, without exception, has been lost to communism was done by the facilitation of the State Department. And not because they were all communists. I believe that they had a globalist agenda of using communism to break down the existing order.
So it's maybe not accurate to say it's a communist conspiracy like others have said, but really a globalist one, as maybe we have been saying, that it's beyond capitalism and communism and these different political structures that a lot of people have their eyes focused on.
There is a communist conspiracy. Mm-hmm. In other words, some people in the conservative movement have believed that our globalists control the communists and they're just taking orders from them. That isn't true. They are competing predators, competing for a new world order. And as we talked about, that's why Lula da Silva, who is a communist, acting the moderate role in Brazil, talking about our new world order, well, he's talking about on behalf of the Soviets. They want to control the new world order, and our Anglo-American establishment wants to. But essentially, the Anglo-American establishment is trying to use the communists to break down the social order. They can come back and rescue the countries, come in as the heroes, install through manipulation of the press and the electoral process a globalist, which is a more moderate form of socialism, one that doesn't believe in killing capitalism like communism does, but believes in milking capitalism. That is, let it have enough freedom. And that's, for example, the kind of free market capitalism that gave capitalism a bad name through President Bush. Bush is a globalist, or at least he's a puppet of a globalist. His version of capitalism, his version of free market, was only for the big international corporations that were in bed with government. If you look at all of the NAFTA and WTO agreements, there's nothing in there that allows for freedom of the small guy, the small entrepreneur and capitalist. It's only for the major corporations. So there's a dual purpose. Once again, we promote globalism using the bait of free market to get people to accept it. But in essence, we're also defaming the free market, giving it a bad name through the horrible presidency of President Bush, so that it comes out as the enemy.
Very interesting. Well, I want to get your thoughts now on what's happening today, but before we do that, I want to get a brief description on Mao Zedong and supposed globalist support of him, and a little bit more about Russia, the Bolshevik Revolution, which we alluded to earlier, but starting with Mao Zedong. I heard that he was supported by the Western bankers for a number of reasons. We'd like to talk about that.
Well, it's not so much you can say by the Western bankers, because it's only a certain clique of bankers. They're very much tied to the House of Morgan and, J.P. Morgan originally.
House of Morgan,
that's right.
That's specific. That's
and Lamont and several other Wall Street firms. And these were globalists.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it isn't that bankers per se are evil. It isn't just that having money turns them all evil. There were people who were principled, who have money, and who ran banks honestly.
Certain men in industry.
That's right. And certain men in industry that were honest, etc. But there were other industrials like Carnegie and Ford that got into bed with government and started to use government's monopoly powers to secure them against competition. And that's not true free market capitalism. That is crony capitalism, or mercantilism, as it used to be called in history. So what happened in Mao Zedong, of course, he was financed by the West. He was given loans from them, which were never paid back and never forced into redemption. He was given arms by George Catlett Marshall, who ran World War II. He was the supreme Allied commander, political commander, ahead of Dwight D. Eisenhower. In fact, we could go on for another hour about the horrors that Eisenhower committed in World War II in terms of he literally gave the order to starve 2 million German prisoners of war who had made every human effort to get to the Western Front so that they could capitulate to the Allies rather than go into the Soviet gulags. They had used draconian efforts to yield themselves to the Allies, knowing that they'd be given liberty. And here he put them in open barbed wire encampments during the winter without tents, without sufficient food, and literally gave the death sentence to 2 million German. We say, well, we may not have sympathy for these people, but soldiers themselves are not guilty for the acts of war. It's the leaders that are really the evil ones.
Okay.
But the British and Eisenhower as well took Russian troops who had never been under Stalin, who had always been free Russian troops, and turned them over to Stalin at the end of the war and tricked them into doing so, telling them that they were going to a camp run by the British, and they had loaded into trucks and they drove them into a Soviet camp and turned them over as prisoners.
Okay.
I mean, just some horrible crimes against humanity. We had Operation Keelhaul run by Eisenhower, whereby he took all of the refugees who had fled Stalin's Russia to Germany and to Albania and everywhere else, and he herded them all back, even at gunpoint. A lot of people committed suicide rather than go back. And Eisenhower was ruthless about obeying Stalin's command because of Roosevelt and because of George Catlett Marshall, of driving these people back. And he's a great black mark against the West, but a very not told about. Going back to the Russian Revolution, for example, when we had, after the Kerensky government, which was a puppet government in between the revolutions, this was kind of like a coalition government to have peace between the Bolsheviks and the what was called the White Russian opposition, they were betrayed by the West. The White Russians had the superior armies, and then their arms were cut off by the West, and arms were allowed to flow and not interdicted to the Reds. And so it's just like Mao Zedong.
No, that's where that drink comes from.
White Russian.
Oh, okay. Real quick then. Soviet Union collapse. The era of Gorbachev and then the creation of Russia. What was really going on there?
In my World Affairs brief, I cover this aspect extensively. That this, in my opinion, was a very carefully crafted deception. It was foretold by Anatoly Galitzin, one of the primary defectors from Russia. He knew about this 20 years before it happened. He said they're planning another major era of detente where they will pretend like the Soviet Union is collapsing in order to get the West to take on the burden of all of the satellite states economically while they continue to build economically. And what was interesting, anybody who saw, I was present when this was happening. I was watching the news coverage and I said, I'm not believing what I'm hearing. The parroting going on by the West, they're covering for the Russians. It was so obvious to a trained eye, for even an untrained eye, that this was a fraud. I mean, here you have Gorbachev in his undefended villa, and the KGB failed to arrest him, could not complete the attack on Gorbachev. I mean, who are we believe that this KGB has overthrown governments, runs one of the most sophisticated assassination teams in the world, and it can't take down Gorbachev in his undefended villa? And then Yeltsin stands up on a tank in Red Square and broadcasts to all the world, but the television station is still in control of the communists, and we're to believe that they didn't flip the switch?
And the CIA can't find bin Laden, by the way.
You know, that's
yeah.
Right.
And, kind of funny how it works.
So you see, this was a fraud, and then we're to believe that in the aftermath of the coup, the head of the KGB, the defense minister, and the head of the GRU, which is the military Soviet intelligence, fled from who? Who else has military and power? Who runs the secret police but those three people? Well, what it means is either they didn't flee, or if they were fleeing, they weren't in charge. In fact, every one of those three individuals some 2 years before were mid-level bureaucrats. Now, if you know anything about the Soviet system, same thing with Gorbachev. He was a mid-level arms negotiator 2 years before he ascended to the premiership. Now, that doesn't happen in Soviet communism.
Mm-hmm.
It's a ruthless system where you cut your way to the top by, you know, assassinating, and there's a lot of infighting, et cetera, in communism. But when someone takes you from being a mid-level bureaucrat to being premier, that means you aren't running the show. You're a puppet. And when the head of the KGB and the GRU and the defense minister were mid-level bureaucrats and suddenly ascended, somebody brought them up. And those are the people really running behind the scenes. Now, who are they? Well, essentially, they are what we call the Russian oligarchs today. All of the Russian oligarchs are the Russian mafia that President Putin claims to despise and that they're the enemy of the state.
Yeah.
Were, in fact, the Russian leaders.
Putin was KGB, correct?
That's right. They were the Russian leaders who were the bosses of Putin.
Okay.
Boris Berezovsky, Khodorkovsky, and the rest. Now, let me show you how they did this. What they did, since they controlled things, they told the Soviet Central Bank to loan them the money so that they could buy up Gazprom, the oil and the gold concerns, all of these major industries that made them suddenly wealthy. Where did they get the money to buy this? From the Russian Central Bank. How did they have the power to get the Russian Central Bank to do that? They were the heads of government. This was proven by one of my sources in Russia who said, when Yeltsin was president and Boris Berezovsky was secretary of the Commonwealth of Independent States, the CIS, they were having a meeting in the Kremlin. He saw Yeltsin step aside and usher Gorbachev in first. Now, in Russian protocol, that's never done unless that person is a superior to you. And that indicates that Yeltsin knew who was running the show. Now, Boris Yeltsin is playing the role as the antagonist. He sits in London in his villa. He's very wealthy, and he pretends openly to be attacking Putin. He claimed to be able to mount a coup against Gorbachev, and he was going to do it with all of his millions of dollars. Now, who in their right mind, if they're going to do a coup against a government, would advertise it to the whole world? This is a fraud. Mm-hmm. This is a charade. In fact, Boris Berezovsky met with Vladimir Putin 5 times at his Spanish villa the year Putin ascended to the presidency. Now, that doesn't sound like enemies to me. But Putin is playing the role that he's an enemy, and it's because by setting himself up as the president who's against the oligarchs, he at once poisons capitalism in the minds of people, because the oligarchs, which are actually communists, claiming to be capitalists. So it poisons the people against them. Mm-hmm. Our attacks in the Balkans and Serbia also poisoned the people in Russia against America. But Putin and his puppet Medvedev is able to project himself as if he is the enemy of the oligarchs. This causes the Russians, who are longing for the good old days when we were the powerful world nation, to look to Putin as the great nationalist savior of Russia. All of this is carefully planned deception, perhaps the greatest deception that has been foisted upon the world, the phony fall of the Soviet Union.
There's a couple different red flags that I began to see about 2 years ago that lead me to wonder if a possible upcoming World War III is on the horizon, and that it's staged by a certain number of people. Here's a couple of red flags. There's a lot of unanswered questions to 9/11, for one thing, which is a completely separate topic. However, we have not seen those questions publicly being raised by China and Russia. Yet they've criticized American foreign policy, but if they really want to be critical, let's take a closer look at what's really going on. You have some other things, too. I'm just leading here to something for those also in the audience that might be wondering the same thing. We look at the situation last year with Georgia. We see the United States funding Georgia and Israel as well, billions of dollars to commit literally genocide in South Ossetia. So we're seeing these type of posturings and things like this, movements taking place out in the Baltic Sea and other things. Then I looked a little further, then I found many reports of Putin and Bush vacationing together, and pictures of them vacationing together, and reports of Putin going to Crawford. So it raises another question. The other thing is China. If China's so critical of the things that we're doing, why are they funding our war in the Middle East? And in terms of the issues with 9/11, those particular towers, you know, those have been shipped to China at a very affordable rate. There are many people who would like to get their hands on those pieces of steel to take a look at the forensic evidence to figure out why they ended up coming down the way that they did. But for some reason, it's in China. So I want to get your take on why, when we have terror drills here in Portland, for example, they say it's about an Al-Qaeda dirty bomb attack, but they're really doing drills in aerospace. They're simulating an attack from another country. Right now, some people listening may be hearing the jets overhead, and there's a lot of activity up there because they're doing drills and Navy war games off the ocean, anticipating a day where something's going to be happening here, in particular the Pacific Northwest, Seattle. Where would you like to begin in terms of...
Well, you've covered a lot of ground, Alex.
Yeah, wherever you'd like to begin, but I just want to get all that out there. These are some of the red flags that are out there.
Well, how to begin... It's important to understand about the war on terror that, in my estimation, this is fraudulent. That isn't to say that there aren't legitimate terrorists. In fact, our actions in the Middle East have done more to provoke additional hatred and discontent against America than almost anything we can do. We have built a large body of terrorists if they didn't exist before. But the question is, who controls the controllers of terrorism? I'll give you an example. If we had legitimate, independent terrorism that wasn't being controlled, we have essentially open borders in the southwest with Mexico, through at least half the border, in our oceans as well, very little security. You can drive a rowboat or drive a motorboat right up to the beach and there isn't any Coast Guard to stop you. Terrorists can do the same thing. If there were as much independent terrorism as our government claims, we would be inundated with normal acts of terrorism, blowing up electrical pylons out in the desert south, but they're totally unprotected, blowing up railroad lines, walking into malls as suicide bombers. These should be happening every month.
During Katrina, nothing happened either. That was a time when our nation was vulnerable.
How difficult is it for a terrorist to get into Mexico? Nothing at all. How difficult is it to walk across the border with a coyote leading the way? Not difficult. There's been nothing. Not a single act of normal terrorism before 9/11 or after 9/11. Why only these major, high-profile, sophisticated events that, in fact, frankly, could not have been done without black operations specialists from our own government assisting? You can't bring down those towers with those airplanes the way that they did because of the structural core of the center of the towers could have held up the towers alone. And the airplane that hit the second tower only clipped the side of the building, didn't touch that core. And yet it came down.
The concrete was pulverized. Molten steel was found.
And yes. The reason that steel was shipped away is so that the evidence of planned demolition could. Of course, Building 7 was an obvious planned demolition. In fact, there were several witnesses to the demolition. There were announcements to the firefighters to get out because we're going to bring the building down. And so Building 7 in the World Trade Center, we know is a planned demolition. That means that there are tens of demolition experts who know they planted the explosives in these buildings and yet have not come forth. And obviously there are some very powerful threats against them were they to do so. But the entire 9/11 was created as a scenario in order to justify going into Afghanistan or Iran. And there was an argument in the White House whether or not to go into Iraq or Afghanistan. And one side said, no, we've got to go into Afghanistan first. At first, meaning that we're going to use this to justify going into Iraq. So the reasons for attacking both Afghanistan and Iraq were fraudulent. And they will continue to do so, but we're definitely building a huge base, 14 minor bases and 4 major bases. We do not intend to leave. Obama claiming that he's going to pull these troops out is not true. He's simply going to change the names and the designation of the troops. There'll be at least 50,000 troops staying. And I believe that there's going to be a major regional war starting with an attack on Iran by Israel, which will be followed by a counterattack against American forces, which will justify the U.S. getting involved in this major regional war in Iran.
What are you looking at? Give us an idea. We've got about 20 minutes left on the show. But in terms of
timing,
where we're vulnerable, timing, I'll tell you, a lot of people are looking at this summer, leading up to December of this year, leading into 2010, 2011, that these next couple of years are going to be highly significant. In terms of a possible skirmish with China and Russia, and obviously there's something strange going on with North Korea, because if we're out there going, we're going to impose sanctions, threaten your food source, I'm not on anybody's side here. There's something bad going on, because if Rumsfeld gave them these light water nuclear reactors, something's wrong here. If the media can't talk about that. So it seems that somebody wants something to happen that's really big.
All right, let's talk about this, because first of all, I don't think anything's going to happen with North Korea. And I'll tell you why. Iran is the target, and there's a great dichotomy between the two. North Korea is a regime that is the most tyrannical in the entire world. There is no other country that is oppressed and is devastated economically, socially, and politically as North Korea is under Kim Jong-il. And yet, Rumsfeld and followed on by Gates have guaranteed North Korea we will not seek regime change and we will not use military power to overthrow them. It's a guaranteed of immunity, essentially. And yet Iran, which has at least a fourth of the people are very, very pro-Western, is a very modern society, has been strangled by sanctions, you know, is into the grip of a clerical radical Muslim group. But still, they still have elections, even though it has been, you know, and most elections in almost all countries are rigged in favor of the ruling class. But nevertheless, this is a very civilized country.
Obviously, you don't have time to get into it right now, but for those that don't know, there's chaos in Iran right now. Many protesters have been shot, about seven.
And 15 now. Doug.
15 now, and then YouTube, Facebook, those things, all except for Twitter, have been taken down. The other thing is, though, the government's involved. There's information indicating the CIA is involved, the opposition, on the other side.
That's right, and then nothing's more exemplary of this than the forged letter that surfaced yesterday in Iran, claiming to be one of the ministers writing to the Ayatollah, explaining to him what the real votes were in the skewing of the election and giving Ahmadinejad only 5 million some votes. Now, the letter is a forgery. It's a very good one. It's a fraud. And yet, it's covering material that's essentially true, that it's skewed, but the actual details are so falsified, so imbalanced, that it's not believable. So this is a very sophisticated way in which black operations do disinformation. They did the same thing to American conspiratorialists in America over Obama. Obama's an illegal alien, born in Kenya, his mother falsified his birth certificate in Hawaii. And the establishment has sealed all of his records, his university records, where he was a foreign student. He got a foreign scholarship to Oxford.
You mean to attract them that way? To get people to focus on a certain thing?
No.
Okay.
They've covered it up so that it will not be available to the American people.
Okay.
In other words, they've made a deal with Obama when they decided to run him as a politician. We'll cover for you. Yeah, we know that you're not eligible to be president, but we'll make sure that no one, not even the Supreme Court, will rule on this. We can guarantee we control all these aspects. But
that's why they don't mention that on Fox. They're supposedly attacking Obama, Sean Hannity.
Right.
They don't bring up certain things that we've brought up. Yeah.
That's right. And Fox will not bring up anything about you know, the involvement of our government in 9/11 or Oklahoma City bombing. In other words, this is what we call controlled opposition, not true opposition. They only give you a certain portion of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Media is always manipulated by what they omit, what they fail to tell you. But remind me where we were going to when we were talking about Obama.
Well, you know, I read that for debt relief we're giving, and this is the critical part of the big picture here, at least what I'm as much info as we can get out, you know, giving Chinese fighter jet technology for debt relief, things of this nature, all the money that we borrowed from China, it's in the trillions of dollars. It's a debt we will not be able to pay back, and we'll be scrambling just to pay for the interest. And it's like, what is this leading up to? The Chinese are going to be coming in here with their cargo when they develop the North American Union, if they get that far at the superhighway. So where do you see the threat in terms of this jeopardization of our national security? For example, Los Angeles, Hu Jintao's son runs that scanning company that's going to be scanning the Chinese cargo coming in. They got a no-bid contract from Homeland Security, and this came out in the news 4 to 5 months ago. What's going on here?
Well, it's going on at multiple levels with China. The transfer of technology has been ongoing ever since I started the publishing of World Affairs Brief clear back in the 1990s. For example, I had a subscriber who was an engineer at Hughes Aerospace, and he wrote me one day and he said, look, the Chinese are crawling all over this plant. You know, we have to have security badges, a clearance to work on these high-tech military projects, and we've got Chinese military and engineers coming and looking over our shoulders. He said, last week we went and complained to the plant manager about the Chinese being here. And what did they do? Hughes locked us out of the company, the plant, on Saturdays and gave the Chinese the run of the plant on Saturday. Same thing happened at General Dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
You realize that we still allow interchange between scientists to our top-level weapons labs, Los Alamos and Sandia and other weapons labs. You and I can't even get in there as ordinary Americans.
Oh, they can.
Even with a security clearance. But we give them security clearances. So we have been facilitating the transfer of technology. We did a joint development project, Boeing and Zvezda Strela, the weapons lab of Russia, on the F-35 fighter. What was the purpose of that? Was to make sure that the technology of that fighter jet got transferred to Russia, and that's where it gets to China.
There's also other things we've got on that deal with controlling their populations, like sound weapons. I remember reading that last year.
We've developed sound weapons that have, you know, very effective at mass
the
control.
Intel made them a supercomputer, too.
Yeah, and help them actually tyrannize their people. We allow weapons and prison technology to help them in their gulags. But this isn't strictly, you know, critics on the left of the globalism, and we appreciate their friendship. I come from the libertarian side. But critics on the left view this only as greedy capitalism. This is all for money, but it's much deeper than that. We didn't go into Iraq.
Or shortly said it was all about Bush.
Well, we didn't go into Iraq because of oil only. Oil was one of the motives, to be sure, and it's still playing out that way. But it has to do mostly with a World War III scenario that's coming up. In other words, to control oil when Russia and China are the enemy, because they are dependent, or not Russia, but China is dependent on foreign, highly dependent on foreign.
Do you believe this is coming?
Absolutely.
This is serious. We need to talk about it.
But China is being set up not only to become an enemy, because it already is. I mean, Russia and China have not been developing and hiding their weapons capabilities from the West for years because they are allies. It is our government that continues to promote this propaganda that they're allies. Our government knows these people are preparing for war. We've had multiple defectors from both China and Russia telling our CIA that every time they have a military major operation and maneuver, they use and start the maneuver with a simulated nuclear attack on America.
EMP? That would cause some
sort
of a takedown of the grid.
That begins with an EMP attack, three or four nuclear weapons strategically placed over the United States, blankets the nation with a wave of electromagnetic pulses that gets into the power lines, sends a high voltage signal down, and fries everything. Unless they're hardened, as our military gear is now hardened against EMP. But our military, according to defectors, our military sites, including our commission sites, are going to be targeted by actual nuclear weapons. So what EMP doesn't take down, the actual nuclear weapons will. And so we are being set up, in my opinion, and this is my warning to the world, for a preemptive nuclear strike from Russia and China. And I think it will come no earlier than the middle of the next decade. I don't think China is ready to back Russia up on this. Russia is nearly ready. They're just simply destabilized by not knowing how many secret weapons the U.S. is developing and whether or not they've stolen enough technology to be able to take on. The Russians have the advantage of having about 80% of the technology we do in terms of advanced weaponry, but they have about a 10-to-1 advantage on conventional weapons, so that after the nuclear weapons are used up, then they have a tremendous conventional weapons advantage. In addition, Russia, for example, to show their bad faith as an ally, has been building since the early 1990s huge underground bunker cities, two of them in the Ural Mountains. One is called Yazvinsky Mountain, the other is Yamantau Mountain. These areas are approximately the size of the Washington, D.C. metro area underground.
Underground.
Now, these are not mining establishments. They have multiple railroad tracks going in. We have never in our satellites seen any mining cars coming in or out of that. It's all been box cars, large, extra-long freight cars taking in missiles. My contacts in the government say that they believe that this is, in fact, underground factories to continue the production of nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons even after the beginning of a nuclear war.
So in Russia, they have underground bases, too, and in places where bunkers where they're developing lots of different weapons.
That's right. Now, when this article about Yamantau Mountain surfaced in the New York Times front page, 1997, they queried the CIA about it, and the CIA said, oh, we're not worried about it, it's defensive. Well, to this day, there's not been a single person in our weapons inspection team that's been allowed into Yamantau Mountain. So how do they know it's defensive? This is prima facie evidence, I'm telling you, Alex, that our government is covering for Russian war preparations. Just like our own government downplayed the threat of Hitler until it was actually upon him. That's why they give an annual report on China and they downplay the Chinese threat. They excuse the Chinese threat. They show concern. But there is no annual report whatsoever from the Pentagon about the Russian threat, which is far more advanced than the Chinese threat. Now, this is all a ruse about Russian economic weakness. Russia has tremendous reserves because of their oil power, and the oil price is coming back up. They're turning most of this in their command economy into weapons development, and that's one of the reasons why the domestic sector continues to be hurting, because they purposely want to maintain an image of weakness so that it becomes unbelievable to American analysts outside the Pentagon. The Pentagon are under an absolute gag order, and the CIA, not to mention anything about the Russian threat. I've had insiders tell me that. We don't understand why they won't let us
from the targets.
Warn the American people. Well, they plan on targeting not civilian population centers, but only military targets. They don't want to be viewed as the bully of the world. They want to be viewed as we're taking down the bully of the world, the one who's intervening and causing havoc around the world, which is the U.S. under the Bush administration, got that reputation. And that globalist agenda, by the way, will continue under Obama. Those who are listening who are fans of Obama need to understand. And there was an article put out by Glenn Greenwald in Salon.com that detailed all the betrayals of what Obama promised his supporters he would do, and he's following the Bush agenda on every single one of them. About 15 major things, from government secrecy to surveillance to unlimited detention through, it just goes on and on, through lobbying. I mean, he's
Monsanto, for those of you who like to, grow organic vegetables. He's in the agricultural head.
But he's gone against all of his promises. This man is a puppet. He made a deal. He started out as a leftist, if not a communist. He made a deal some 8 years ago with the globalists that they would give him political power and protect him and make him wealthy. I mean, that's why within a year and a half after that deal, he was able to afford a $1.5 million mansion, plus the Resco deal essentially giving him the property next door at $6.5 million. 2 years after that, he was able to buy a $9 million property in Hawaii. Now, where does a person on a $40,000 community lawyer salary or a state senator salary get that kind of money? It doesn't. It comes through insider dealing, through making a deal with the globalists.
Well, what he's done is quadruple our debt, but he's not done yet. He's talking about a global bailout package. Well, he's been talking about this for some time, and yeah. Henry Kissinger says he'll be great for the development of the New World Order, and I guess that would be the Anglo-Saxon Western New World Order. So the question is, with this economic crash, which appears to clearly be by design, what happens after that? Because many other researchers that I've interviewed about the World War III scenario talk about both of those things being pretty close to one another, economic crash and maybe some sort of a conflict after that, or something else transpiring.
Well, I do believe that this crash was engineered. Obviously, anybody who was inside on the system knew that the derivatives and the subprime mortgage securitization of loans was a Ponzi scheme. They knew that there was no way that anyone securitizing those debts. Securitized packages of debt means just that somebody's providing security. That's through derivative credit default swap contracts. Essentially, they were guaranteeing all of these, and that's why they were able to sell these packages to overseas countries, because AIG was guaranteeing these things, that Goldman Sachs was guaranteeing these things, which were powerful corporations with billions of dollars. Well, they'd actually paid out most of those billions in executive compensation, and they left nothing left to pay off these derivative contracts when they came due. Now, they knew that this was going to happen. You couldn't not know and be on the inside. But in essence, they continue to do so, knowing that they control the Federal Reserve, they control the Treasury, they always have insiders from the Federal Reserve as head of the Treasury. They knew that they could talk, if the crisis was severe enough, they could justify talking Congress into establishing a bailout, and they've done just that. What they haven't been able to get through bailout money, they've done through absolute monetary creation through the Federal Reserve. Now, I do not believe that nations fall economically. And nations who lose their moral compass, nations who become fat, dumb, and happy, and ignorant through a controlled press, and get boresighted on the false economic solutions that are presented before mm-hmm. them, ended up missing the great threat that's looming up behind their back, which ends up being war. And World War III is what the powers that be in this country will use to eliminate this debt. It's obvious they're spending with a bandit. There's no way to pay off this debt. The total American indebtedness is over $50 trillion, counting all obligations that they owe, pension funds and all of the guarantees and the loans, over $50 trillion. You just can't pay it off.
We have 3 minutes left. Okay. Most of the people here know about, they're listening, watching, because they've been talking about this stuff, know something's about to happen and they can feel it. Some people think it's going to be even sooner, like something this year. We didn't get into this because we're out of time, but I'd love to talk more into personal relocation. You've been doing that for a couple decades. Here we are in Portland. We may not get hit, but we're in the big city. On the economic crash, we're going to have to deal with some other unravelings that follow after that, so please get laid off. And they've done a lot of martial law preparations that I've studied personally here in Portland. We have a couple minutes left. What are your recommendations?
Well, let me put it this way. The big threat is not economic. It's going to be hard, and we're not at the bottom yet. But I'll tell you, the big threat comes when a nuclear preemptive strike, even an EMP strike alone, would take this country down for a year to less than a third world country. And I'll tell you, all commerce stops once an EMP strike happens because the computers are fried. What's that going to do? It means instant social unrest. The grocery store shelves are cleared out. People are panicking. And people start to pillage. Even good people are forced to pillage because they have no choice. That's the big problem. Even though Portland is not a nuclear target, Portland is not, it's a safe area in that. In fact, most of the Oregon coast, clear down to the south, is safe from nuclear weapons, except for a residual fallout that may come from Japan.
It's an idea for an indie film, Escape from Lake Oswego.
But the problem, Alex, the problem is social unrest.
Yeah.
The problem is being able to survive pillaging and panic, even among good people who just have not prepared. And so it's important, and that's why I wrote the book Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places, so that people could work on having alternative places to go to retreat to. Eastern Oregon is a great place, beyond the Cascades.
How about Central Oregon?
Central Oregon's excellent as well.
Lots
of places in Southern Oregon. So Oregon has a lot of good, safe, potential places, but one must prepare in advance.
Tell the audience about your website, what they'll find there.
WorldAffairsBrief.com showcases my weekly news analysis, like we've been talking to. Lots of free stuff on that. There is a modest subscription price, and they can subscribe or get a free newsletter by emailing me at editor@WorldAffairsBrief.com.
Well, Joel, thanks for coming on.
My pleasure, Alex.
Appreciate it. Well, next week, Alan Watt will be with us. We'll talk about Hollywood. We'll talk about the mass media and where they want to take the minds of Americans that are literally stuck drooling in front of the tube. We'll also talk about many other things. Oh, by the way, congratulations. We've now turned digital. Yes, it's digital. They control the horizontal and the vertical. Email me if you see anything interesting out there. And email me if you have any information that pertains to the topic that we have discussed tonight. I'm going to begin a documentary film tackling the subject. Until next week, my friends, I'm Alex Yance, reminding you, the path to the ultimate truth still starts within. Good night. Good having you on.
Pleasure, Alex.